Hello, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini. Thank you so much for coming back to the Ghost See Talk podcast experience. Hope your year's going well. Hope things are winding down peacefully and you're not covered in an avalanche of to-dos and wish lists and shopping nightmares as you approach the end of the year. So, hope 2024 has been good for you. If not, 2025 is right around the corner. But if you are in the, let's just call it the naughty column, and you need a laugh, something to pick you up, you really might find some joy, contentment, and overall heartwarmingness, if that's a word, with My Week with Maisie, a phenomenally heartwarming short by Mika Simmons. We're going to talk all about that with Dame Simmons herself. So, Mika, thank you so much for being on the show. How are things in your world?
They're great. I love the fact you've just upgraded me to Dame. I think you're meant to get that from like a king or a queen or at least a prince. But I think that your podcast is a valid acknowledgement, and I'm going to start adding it to all of my business cards and email sign-offs.
Excellent. You have my my well wishes and authority. So let's move forward with that. So hot off of the festival circuit, Mika has just informed us of some really good news concerning her short. You want to share that with the world if they haven't already heard about it?
Oh yeah, we just won Best Comedy at Holly Shorts in their inaugural London festival. So it's a 20-year-old California, Los Angeles-based festival, and we did qualify for the festival in August in the grand old US of A, but we didn't win anything, and they've done their first London festival this past weekend, and we were honored with Best Comedy, which was very touching. And of course, My Week with Maisie is funny, but it sits really in the dramedy camp because there's some very serious undertones. But I feel like, given that I'm Irish and my family are working class Irish, in a way, it makes complete sense that I would win Best Comedy because we do have, the Irish have the best sense of humor in the whole world.
I'm not going to argue with that. Have you ever seen well, not The Inbetweeners, that's a British TV show, but there was a an Irish comedy I saw at Fantastic Fest a number of years ago. I'm struggling for the name. It's like the Offenders or something like that. It's about these two guys who hear of a cocaine boat that went down off the coast of Ireland, and they just go to find it because they think that's their key to wealth and fame. But it's kind of what you what you're getting at. You know, there's a different type of humor when you think of across the pond humor, the UK and Irish, and so it can be deadpan, and I really subscribe to all of that with a little bit of sweetness, maybe sarcasm. It's all in good fun. So congratulations, Team
Thank
My Week with
you.
Maisie.
Exactly. It is a whole team effort. I mean, I would say that, that it's really important always to remember that first it started with the script and then the talent that came on board to work on it, not only the cast, but also all the team, the producer and the heads of department and their teams that brought together a really beautiful little film.
Well, one of the most striking elements of it, and it may not be an element when you're writing it, but I would call it colorful because it is bold. It's a very primary, saturated mix of visuals, locked camera, feels like you're watching a storybook play out. Was that in the planning phases? I was really drawn to it in a sort of Wes Anderson styled way of being.
I am very inspired by Wes Anderson, and I like the way that he uses colour to indicate humour. So his sets, actually more and more so, if you think about Rushmore through to what he's been doing more recently, often have a sense of magic realism that they're not a complete fantastical base, but have a sprinkling of the imagination that sort of tells you're watching something that is not quite real. And that was an inspiration for me because, so when I was asked to direct My Week with Maisie, by the writer Mark Oxtoby, he'd tried a couple of times to direct the film himself, and due to COVID and other icky situations like losing locations, he hadn't quite managed it. And when he brought it to me and asked if I would direct it, I understood why, because there's elements of it that align with other work that I've done in my life, not least directing comedy and as an actor working in comedy. But I also, one of the first things that I said to him was that I would want to set it not in what we have in the UK, which is NHS, which can be quite grisly, and not obviously in a private healthcare ward either, because that would be ostracizing for people watching that don't have that. And I felt neither was right. So one of my first things that I said to Mark was, if I was to direct it, I envisage it being in a sort of slightly heightened and timeless location. And he was very excited by that. So with my designers, both the costume designer, Hannah Tier, and set designer, Anna Papa, we brought together what became the magical place where Maisie and Mrs. Foster meet, finally make friends, and explore life.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned timeless because when the nurses present themselves just short of sort of the candy striping outfit, you know, that was worn in the late 40s, early 50s, might be a little off on my time reference, but it does present that self that it's universal and it lets you just sort of look past the dazzling visuals and just focus on the two characters. And you know, there's a lot, again, color is one thing, but color of character is also important. You know, Miss Foster, she's, you know, she's a dame herself. And then young Maisie, Ellie Mae Siame, they balance each other very well, with the sort of unfailing positivity and the I've been there, this world I cannot take anymore. And then there's a tonal shift, which is great. You see her heart melting. And what was it a Was it specific that she wore blues, Miss Foster, to sort of represent physically she was cold and then warmed up over time?
I think that with Mrs. Foster, Hannah Tier and I wanted her costume to reflect old-fashioned values. So both the style that she wears and also the colour choice was to do with making sure that it again indicated a sense of tradition. And I think navy blue is a color that the Queen often used to wear when she was
Okay.
with us. And I feel like navy blue is a standard British color to suggest authority and, as I said, tradition and a sense of regality, I guess. And the changes in her costume were very subtle. And also that generation, that my grandfather, he wore dark colours and they wore the same things. I mean, they lived through the war, so they just chose dark colours and wore the same suit over and over again, you know, in a way that, and they didn't have what we have today with maybe this awful like quick fix kind of fashion where you can buy a suit in a from a brand that actually may not be paying the people that made it. Well, I'm not going to mention any of those brands' names, but I guess for Mrs. Foster's generation, they wouldn't be buying throwaway clothes. They'd be buying clothes that were built to last and often in colours that wouldn't show stains. You know, it was a very different era. And as you've hinted at with Maisie, we tried, as in the film, My Week with Maisie, I very much wanted it to be timeless. So while her costumes are quite old-fashioned, which are completely appropriate for her character, Maisie is wearing very modern costumes, and the nurses, as you've pointed out, are slightly futuristic combined with very old-fashioned. So the dresses, nurses don't wear those anymore. The nurses in my local hospital wear scrubs. You know, they're wearing trousers and like throw-on things, which I quite like to wear out on a Saturday night, to be honest with you. But we had them in the old-fashioned nurses' dresses with, you know, the watch, the upside-down watch, which is what my grandmother wore. and then wearing, they have white plastic boots on, which are very futuristic. And you wouldn't see those anywhere yet in a hospital. So we tried to play with the timing again to let the audience know that this isn't a place that they have been or know well themselves. And some of that, as I've said, is to tell the audience that it's a comedy, but also I think I had a mind of not triggering people into too much memory in the sense of I lost my mother to cancer. And I feel if you watch a film about cancer that isn't a dramedy and it's set in an NHS ward, you get that really impactful identification of, gosh, that's what the ward looked like that my fill in the blank family member or loved one was in. And I actively chose to create a timelessness. And again, as we've already said, a heightened set so that people wouldn't lose 5 minutes in a kind of trauma reaction, as can happen with film. Film is there to help us process. And a different version of My Week with Maisie, set in a NHS ward, might have created a much not deeper rea a deeper reaction to the cancer treatment. And really, what that speaks to, or what I'm speaking about, is that the film for me has the backdrop of cancer and the threat that that causes to life. But the film itself is about a complete change of mindset that we see in traditional, slightly old-fashioned, I would say, speaking on behalf of Joanna and Mrs. Foster, closed-minded, whose synapses have become limited, and she's fighting her reality. She has a son who she suspects, actually, she knows that he is a man who lives with a man and is therefore gay, and she is antagonistic about that. And our film's strongest theme is around how a young woman changes an older person's mindset to bring her back into open-mindedness. So I guess that was that theme of overcoming prejudice was another reason to not set it in a cancer ward that would be so devastating to see, that really you didn't get that other message coming through.
Well, it's really charming because she, as you were intonating, she heals in a number of ways, and you see how just she had been carrying this weight for years. I had a friend of mine tell me an expression. He says, when you're holding a hot coal, the only person you're hurting is yourself. So if you have the ability to put that hot coal down, you begin to change, and there's a reprieve from it. But the fact that you can tell she's been living under her way of life for too long of a time, but it's captivating and enchanting how quickly that turns with just a little bit of kindness, a little bit of perspective changing, and then at the end of the short, it's she because she's kind of like the Grinch and Ebenezer Scrooge, but suffers some loss and tries to find her way back and realizing that that she's going to learn from this experience.
Yes, and also Maisie, for me, she is not kind to a child who also has cancer at the beginning. And so it's just that sort of moment in life where our own defensiveness, fear, anger at where we've landed in the world, disapproval, at some stage it starts to hurt us, as you said, with the hot coal, but also she isn't nice to a child who's had cancer for the majority of her life. And I think that, as the film progresses, she cannot live with herself. Mrs. Foster cannot live with herself that she has been unkind to a small human being. So, that's a very important change that she realizes she is going to be in this treatment room with this child, and she is going to have to make friends with her, which opens her heart just enough to start listening to the things that Maisie has to say, which are, I mean, just brilliant.
And it's really great how kids see the world because sometimes they don't have a filter. Many times they don't know what they don't know. And, they adapt to their surroundings. So, depending on what your upbringing is, what your experiences are, you're reacting to and enveloping these things that have been in your purview. But, again, with the unfailing optimism, as I like to say, she is a perfect tonal. I wouldn't even say antagonist, but just opposite of Dame Joanna Lumley. And so I'm curious, I was thinking Meryl Streep, Joanna Lumley, maybe Imelda Staunton. Who was your short list to really drive home that dry and upper crust delivery?
Joanna Lumley.
Okay. It's not even a list, it's a post-it. It's like, okay.
I mean, I think the way that you've described it is perfect. If we'd have had a bigger budget, I would have loved to have shown Mrs. Foster in her tiny apartment with barely anything in it, having her cup of tea. Like it's that loneliness, the loneliness of the old person who has, well, society has a lot to answer for in the lack of care we actually are giving in community to older generations. However, there are also older people that have blocked themselves in. And as you've described, Mrs. Foster is definitely one of those that she has blocked love. She'd blocked herself from the sunlight of love through her own bigotry. And I, that really is the magic that happens, that it is never too late to re-find your way into the heart and open-mindedness. And I would hope, don't leave it until you're in a cancer treatment ward to do that. And that message is for all human beings, because I think we can all be very guilty when we are hurt of blocking that sunlight. And I think Joanna was, I asked Mark Boxby, the writer, what he thought about Joanna, and he said that she would be his dream. And I do have a list of actors. There was a list that we put together, and I and they were all British, so it wasn't Meryl. Imelda wasn't on there, mostly because I don't know how to get in touch with her. But Joanna just said yes straight away. So, but she really was our top choice. It wasn't, I mean, I've been very lucky with casting in my films that because I've been working in the industry myself for a while, and I've had some successes, and I work hard and I'm loyal and I've got a good reputation. I have the ability to reach out directly, and I think people know my work. So, however, all of that aside, I did not think Joanna was going to say yes 3 days later. And it certainly took the brakes off the project. Of course, helped us raise the rest of the funding. We had enough to make it, but not enough that I wanted. And that having Joanna attached to it helped that. And I was thrilled. I was absolutely thrilled that she loved the script as much as I did. And I think really the reason Joanna's perfect, because as you've noted, Joanna is the most fantastically open-minded and fun, intelligent woman. And what I love about her performance in Maisie is that people have said to me that they haven't quite seen this version of a performance from Joanna where she at the beginning is out of the comedy and is really quite nasty. And I sort of knew in my mind's eye and in my heart that actually probably only Joanna could get away with it. It's a big thing to be nasty to a child. And I think that the topics are ones that Joanna has spoken out publicly about as well. Again, speaking on her behalf, but she has spoken out actively about equality for people who have different choices in terms of their sexuality, and she's anti-racism, and she's someone who has used her profile to very lightly say that's not okay. So having her play a role that I hadn't quite seen her do before, combined with knowing that her voice meant a lot in the space of equality, was just a double bonus.
Well, we could continue to throw praise on Dame Lumley, but let's talk just a little bit about Ellie Mae. I think that there was a a famous line in Hollywood that never you're supposed to never work with kids or animals. And so in the most literal sense, this is phoning it in, just sitting in a chair. It must be a pretty easy gig to have your Screen Actors card. But how do you deal with children who are dealing with concepts that maybe are above their intellect, their understanding? And then also, I don't know how long the shoot was. Sometimes kids' voices can fluctuate because they're growing. So did you have any of those issues where she might age out of her own experience?
Well, I mean, our shoot was 2 days, so that wasn't an issue.
Okay. We'll strike that from the records.
She is, I mean, she is now, she was 9 at the time, almost 10, which was the right age, spot on for Maisie. Sometimes you get an older child that looks like 9, but Maisie was 9. Ellie was 9, playing Maisie, who was 9. And she's now 12, and we did a screening recently, and she turned up looking like a mini goddess. She's become a teenager, double digits, and she's very talented. We were very lucky with Ellie. Ellie's mother is an Irish, a wonderful Irish woman, and she's a nurse herself, and she is Ellie's chaperone when Ellie works. She is one of the most humble, loving, intelligent women that I've ever met. And not only was she helpful on set, we'd be like, would that go in there like that? So we had like a double whammy. We had her as a chaperone for Ellie, and also she was like an advisor. We did have cancer advisors, but she was great to have around. But in terms of the topics that were challenging for a young person, Mary, her mum Mary, was really fantastic about those things. I was nervous about it. I don't have children, and I think that it is a huge responsibility to introduce any new topic to a child, and should be done by the parents. So I think for child actors, it's a very delicate space where they are, as you say, being thrown into adult ideas, concepts, losses, sadnesses, perhaps before their age group is. So I felt very lucky to have Mary there to run past. And I had a private conversation with Mary and checked in with her and asked her how she wanted me to handle some of the topics. There were a couple of jokes in the original script that didn't make it in. I shouldn't say jokes. There are a couple of points that Ellie, as Maisie makes, that were around inappropriate attention from an adult to a child, and also to do with someone who they knew in their family who had who was trans. And we had to have conversations around those things as well. So there was cancer, there was the homosexuality of Mrs. Foster's son, and then there were these other two jokes that I just referenced. When I say jokes, just to be really clear, they were not making fun of those two things, but they were in the same light-hearted, upfront, Maisie way. That's how they were handled, and so it was quite a big ask for a child to be speaking on those topics. And Mary really helped me to navigate that with Ellie, and we told her as much as she needed to know, really. In a funny way, some of the things that come out of her mouth, she doesn't really need to understand, because it is black and white for Maisie. It's black and white. You shouldn't have prejudice against someone because they love someone of the same sex. With the other two moments, she was very disparaging around the person who'd given unwanted attention, and she was very excited about the person that had followed their natural course and become the sexuality that they believe or that they were born with. Those two moments didn't make it in, because I just felt that they detracted from it. I feel like one was enough, and the message is still clear, which is that love is love is love is love. And human beings are all equal. And I didn't want to. I've been seeing things recently where it's almost like they've got every single idea in there, and it's not necessary. The message is about togetherness and love and acceptance, and to stop trying to control other people's lives based on your own perspective. And one thing was enough. And I also felt that the ending, which I won't give away, was more prolific and important. And what happened right at the end was better if that was the only one of those storylines coming through. But yeah, I mean, it was a thing talking to it was a thing talking to 9-year-old Ellie about those things. But she's in very, very good hands. So yeah. And then of course on set, she had to have breaks all the time, because that's the other thing. You mentioned working with children and animals, which I think is probably very disparaging to say you should. I think it might say children, animals, and old people at one of the quotes that I've heard, which is, which is, it's just, I mean, it's sort of really insulting to put to say that. But Ellie did have to have lots of breaks, and that was hard, because if we were really in a flow and then she had to pop off for a break, and she used to get frustrated too. And it's very dialogue heavy. So actually, as an actor myself, I've just been filming and I couldn't get one of the monologues that I had to do. And, so that happens. You'll get, Joanna give the most perfect performance and Ellie will have to go on a break, or Ellie will stumble on her lines, or vice versa. Ellie will be like in flow and just giving us the best Maisie she could possibly give. And Joanna would stumble on a line, because that's what acting is. And that was challenging because it's done, but that's because it's dialogue heavy. In other things that I've made, you cut a lot more and it's not just a conversation, but yeah, it was tough. I'm looking forward to working with Ellie again when she doesn't have to have breaks.
Well, I heard a story, actually two stories back when George Lucas was filming Star Wars, that he couldn't get all the shots that he wanted because of the union mandated breaks. And granted, that was in the 70s, and something similar happened to James Cameron in the 80s. But how did you shoot this? Were you subject to union breaks and things like that? Am I t speaking about bygone things, or did you kind of have the time you needed to get those 2 days of shooting?
Well, I think everything just revolved around Ellie, actually. Those things are still in place. Since COVID, there's been a new way of filming here, which is the rolling breaks. So it used to be very set, and agents would say to you, "Did you get your break? Because otherwise it's overtime." And since COVID, where they had to kind of like shape shift and do things on a parallel, I've noticed filming myself as an actor that actually often there will be rolling breaks and an earlier finish. So I think there is more fluidity within it. But we didn't come up against that, because Ellie was just, Ellie was running the show. Basically, we just all revolved around Ellie Maysam. She was like the queen of the set. And rightfully so. She was just so fun and brilliant to
Yeah.
work with.
The queen gets the green hair. We'll just call that what it is.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question. I know that sometimes shorts can be a vehicle for a number of things in the future, whether it's a proof of concept or a pilot or something. Could you know because this has a theatricality to it and almost a storybook presentation, could you take this on stage? Could you do My Week with Maisie, part of a series of shorts or something like that? What's the next step for you?
I hadn't ever thought about that, but I'll definitely be passing that suggestion on to Mark, who's the writer. This is the first film that I've directed that I didn't write, and I didn't plan to direct work that wasn't my own. I'm not saying it wouldn't have happened in the future, but it definitely wasn't something that I was envisaging. So Mark has the rights to it, and I believe that he would like to take it on to something more. I don't know if he's thought about theatre, but I think he would like to develop it into, I guess, a feature or a series. And it's not something that I am thinking about, because it's his script. And there is something, when I've written other short films that I've made, because I know the characters, sometimes ideas start to come through because I birthed those characters. So then I start to get ideas about what their afterlife might be, or fuller life might be. But I don't really have that naturally with My Week with Maisie. I think Mark does. And I would fully support him to write something bigger, and I hope that he gets that funded. I mean, maybe he'll ask me to direct whatever that is. I don't know. But at the moment, I know that he's very keen to explore it being something more than a short film. So, and for me, it's a wonderful, I my films have done well. This film, My Route with Maisie, is the has done has got further than any others. Obviously, we're in the running for the BAFTAs 2025, which is currently at jury stage, and we'll find out on the 7th of January if we have made the next shorter list. And we've been long listed at the British Short Film Awards in five categories for best short film, best director for me, best best actress for Joanna Lumley, best set design for Anna Papa, and best costume for Hannah Tear. And things like that for me in my career are very, along with winning some other awards too, previously, those are our most recent kind of accolades. But it's very exciting for me to be able to take those things for the feature film that I would like to make. So I have a project which I am almost ready to start taking out to raise finance for and start thinking about who might be a good attachment to it. And I would like to play a part in that myself too. I'd like to self-direct. So yeah, that's what's next for me. And My Route with Maisie will absolutely help, I think, those things, but not in a direct way. I won't be taking it on to anything else. Not yet. Not unless Mark asks me.
All right, well, that remains to be seen, but the road, the creative road and process has been fruitful thus far. So we wish you the very best with any endeavor going forward. Now, to round this out, to make this more about Miss Mika herself, what are Mika Simmons' 10 favorite things? Disclaimer, it could be anything. It could be the sound of water trickling down a brook, it could be the smell of tea in the morning, it could be anything. Just tell us more about you.
My top favorite thing in the world are my nieces, and there's two of them, and they're twins. So does that mean one or one and two?
Depends if you love one more than the other.
They're both equally as brilliant in their own
Okay, well,
special
that'll be
way,
one
even though
A and
they're
one
twins.
B, so that'll be one.
Okay, so 1A and 1B. Number two is film. From when I was very small, I had a difficult time as a child, and I was a bit bullied, and I found solace and escapism in film, and it still speak. I mean, I love all film. You can put me in front of something that people say is bad, and I'm like, I particularly like going to the cinema, and I'm very sad that so many are closing down because there's something about being in a space with other human beings that you can't see, but you can hear them. I just really enjoy the boundaries that it offers and the rabbit hole that you go into together. And I also feel that film is a way to heal and help people to grieve or access love again in their heart when, they see someone on the screen go through a breakup, and it helps them move on from their breakup. I think two is film. Number three is, I would say, chocolate, which is a struggle to have chocolate as number three on your list of things that you love. That's the facts. Number four is London. I love London. I'm a Londoner born and bred. We moved out when I was a kid for a while to have a bit of a sort of more country living, but I really, really love London. Because it's so multicultural and there's so much possibility here for people. I love the noise of it. I love all the varying things that you can do with your time here. Even though most of the time I stay at home and write on my own, when I'm not filming. Number five would be writing. It's something that really speaks to my heart. And a way that I think all human beings can be creative at no cost to themselves or anyone else. And particularly with a pen, writing, like really writing is so important for processing. And I love writing, obviously, At the moment, I'm writing, finishing my feature film, and also I'm writing a novella. Number six would be clothes, but I don't buy a lot of clothes because I've got an eye on the environment. I buy a couple of pieces a year. I love style. I don't spend a lot of money on them. It's not like I'm buying a Gucci piece, but if I see something that is really beautiful, I love investing in that. And I've got pieces in my wardrobe that I still wear 10 years on. Am I on seven?
Yes, this next one will be seven.
Number seven is Earl Grey tea, British Earl Grey tea with milk. Number eight is staying fit and healthy. Really important. I've put it on here. I don't love it. I hate it. I'd much prefer to eat burgers all day and just, slob around. But I know that in my top 10 is being a fit and healthy person because that gives me good mental health and makes me a better family member, better daughter to my dad, and able to create in the way that I do. I keep losing my place on how many I've done. This
This
is.
one will be nine. The next one after running will be nine.
Okay. Nine. I didn't say running. I said keeping fit and healthy. I can't
Oh.
run.
Okay.
I
Oh, you
can't
know how however
run.
you get your metabolism going and
Pilates.
your endorphins up.
Reformer Pilates at One Rebel, which is like to house music. And I can't run. My knees, I've never been able to run. I'm not a runner. Yeah. Number nine is reading, which I don't find enough time to do nowadays because of the interweb. And number 10 is an open fire.
Ooh, that's charming. You could
Which
do
I
quite
have
a
a
few of
gas fire.
those in front of a fire. You can enjoy a view of London out your window whilst having Earl Grey tea with milk while reading or writing. And if you breathe appropriately enough, you can burn calories and therefore keep fit. So, that's a
Aha, I love it, I love it, I love it. Thank you.
That's a great list. And I just because it's we're in the spirit of giving, I'm going to give you your next screenplay. So picture this. We're going to open on foggy London town to where young daughters, your nieces, are saving a theater from being purchased by a global retail clothing developer, tearing down all the theaters in London. And the way they do that is they get together with their aunt to write a fabulous screenplay and develop a wonderfully intoxicating brand of chocolates that are only sold at the theater. So that exclusivity is going to save the cinemas, and your nieces will be happy to be heroes in a story written by you.
My nieces could do that without my help. They're about to be 12. They're so feisty, and they would be so down for that. In fact, I'm scared to tell them about this because they'd probably be thinking, "Let's get on with it
I got 50 pounds right here going into the Mika Simmons
and
film fund. So,
it." Thank you. I
all right. Well,
love it.
everyone, check out My Week with Maisie. We wish it the best as it moves forward in any format, any way, any venue, road, path, cobblestone highway. And we wish you the very best in the next year. But for now, happy Christmas, everyone, and we will catch you next time. Thank you, Mika.
Thank you, Mark. It's been such a pleasure.